Ryan glanced at his cron, seeing that it was only a couple of hours past noon. The ashes of the fire still glowed, and the stripped carcass of the little deer lay to one side. Mildred got up and nudged the blackened bones with the toe of her boot.
Poor little Bambi, but it sure tasted good. Maybe an onion and ginger sauce would have gone well, along with a puree of creamed carrots, snow peas, and a piping of whipped potatoes, followed by some of my mother's hot apple pie and a slice of cheese. Still, mustn't grumble.
Are we moving on? Should we explore a little more of this Garden of Eden?
Not the best of metaphors, my dear Christy.
Why?
Have you forgotten the cunning snake that tempted Eve with the fruit of wisdom, and thus brought about the total ruination of mankind?
One thing I haven't seen around here is a snake. Maybe we'll be all right, Doc.
Enough talk. It's time to walk. Though the land had looked to be fairly flat from near the entrance to the redoubt, it flowed up and down in a number of gullies and dry washes. Ryan glanced behind them, trying to locate the actual sectors, but the angle of the hillside defeated him, keeping them hidden. There was the occasional oasis of meadow, spotted with lupins and asters, but it was mainly mixed forest, with the tall pines having the edge. Twice during the next half hour, they all heard distant rumbles of thunder, far off to the east. From a grassy knoll, Ryan saw that the sky in that direction was darker, streaked with pink and purple flares of a major chemstorm. The light breeze was coming in from the northwest, so there was no great danger of the storm moving their way. From habit, Ryan checked the miniature rad counter clipped to his coat, seeing that the shading was a pale yellow, indicating some minor problems in the vicinity, but nothing serious enough for them to worry about. They traveled on for a half hour, making their way up a gentle slope, with the predominant conifers giving way to groves of oaks. The sun was hot, throwing pools of light among the leafy shadows. It was a heaven of a day. Later, Ryan dozed, lying on his back, his eye closed, relishing a time out of war, a time of relaxation in a gentle and safe environment. There were no venomous muties or ravening animals or thuggish sekmen, just the wind soughing through the leaves and the afternoon sun declining slowly to the west. Christy lay fast asleep at his side, and Dean whittled with his turquoise-hilted knife at the stump of a broken willow branch that he'd picked up along the trail. Michael was climbing a chestnut tree on the far side of the clearing, a tree so massive that it must have dated from well before Skydark. J.B. was more restless. He sat for a while, then unloaded and reloaded the shotgun with the Remington flechettes. Then he reached out for a handful of desiccated pine cones and juggled two of them, introducing a third, and then trying for four, dropping the whole lot. He stood again, moving to watch the teenager making steady progress up the tree.
See if you can spot anything toward where I thought I saw that bill.
Michael waved a hand to show that he'd heard him. A few seconds later, he waved again.
Hey!
What is it?
I can see horsemen about 2 miles away, moving toward us.
Fast?
No, spread out like they're looking for something. Could be hunting, I guess.
How many?
JB was looking up at Michael as if he were considering climbing up to join him.
20 or so! Can't see that clearly! They keep moving in and out of the trees!
We'll go into the brush over there. Look out across the flat land below us.
Want me to come down?
Stay as long as you reckon it's safe. Best they don't see us unless it looks like there's no danger.
JB and Ryan kicked out the ashes of the fire, spreading them with their boots, cooling them.
If they got any trackers with them, they'll follow us easy. Maybe we should run.
And now, if they got trackers, then they'll pick us up. Not like steep mountain country where a man on foot has the edge. Horses will run us down in minutes. Best we hide. Get ready for a firefight.
Carried on the breeze, they began to hear very distinctive sounds.
Fire blast. Michael, you didn't mention them having dogs.
Couldn't see them, Ryan. Sorry!
That changed things. Ryan had encountered barons, particularly in Frontiervilles, who kept packs of dogs, often crossbred Rottweilers, used to hunt down enemies. The animals were notoriously vicious and unreliable, and had been loathed by the trader.
Only thing worse than a baron with a dog is a baron with 2 dogs.
Now the idea of hiding seemed much less attractive, and the idea of running was impossible. If the horsemen had been spotted a couple of hours ago, there might have been sufficient time to retreat to the redoubt and jump out of trouble.
If they come this way, we're done.
Maybe they'll make their kill before they get close enough to pick up our scent.
Christy beckoned to Michael, almost hidden in the branches.
Best come down now.
Still can't see what they're hunting. They're well spread out. I think they're all carrying guns.
Hand or long?
Rifles, and I think some shotguns.
Come down now. Might as well hide in those ferns and see what we can see.
Might it not be possible to ambush them from the cover of the forest?
Despite the potential danger to all of them, Ryan found himself grinning.
You bloodthirsty old... If they were fewer and more bunched together, then we could.
But they aren't, and we can't.
JB tried to judge from the noise of the dogs just how much time they had left. Michael scrambled down from the chestnut tree, jumping the last 15 feet and landing with a casual elegance and ease that Ryan envied.
Less than a mile. Just our luck if the deer comes straight through here.
What if you try and spot it first and take it out with the rifle, Ryan? Could keep them away from us.
I fear that such an act might also bring the ungodly down upon us, like the Assyrians on the sheep in the fold with their cohorts.
Shut up, Doc. But he's part right, Mildred. At the crack of the stire, they're going to get real interested in us. Best chance is hide and hush. Everyone down and everyone real quiet. Those tracking dogs can hear a flea farting at 300 yards.
The ferns were growing on the side of the small stream, the cool water seeping from beneath the roots of a lightning-scarred beech tree. They were so tall and luxurious that they had to be some kind of genetic mutation. But they provided excellent cover. Ryan wriggled in last, wishing that there had been more time to try to conceal their trampled tracks all about the clearing. But if the dogs were that close, then they'd scent them anyway.
I can see down here, Dad.
What?
Sort of open place at the bottom of the slope where it's double oozy. I can see quite a way through the trees. Three trails all meet up.
The seven friends huddled close, snug in the moist green cavern of the ferns. Ryan had eased himself to the front alongside Dean, picking his way with great care as he became aware that the little spring had made the muddy earth loose and treacherous.
Don't get too close, son. If this light gives way, we're all in it, good and deep.
Now the riders were much nearer, enough for Ryan to be able to catch the sound of harnesses and the occasional crack of a whip.
Don't you dare lose him!
Ryan waited, watching between two of the fibrous saw-toothed leaves, wondering if he'd catch a sight of the prey, hoping that he wouldn't. Perhaps it was the mother of the fawn that he'd shot down earlier. He glanced behind him, seeing, as he'd expected, that JB was sitting with his back to the action, looking the other way, making sure they didn't get cold-cocked by someone creeping up from their rear.
Dad!
Fingers tugged at Ryan's sleeve to attract his attention. But Ryan Cotter's keen eye had already spotted what his son had seen. The racketing fluster of a covey of ring-collared pigeons rose from a thicket about 200 yards away, in a direct line from the noise of the hunters. Something, presumably the prey, was heading straight toward them. Through a gap in the trees, Ryan caught a glimpse of a blur of movement, dark brown, running fast.
Deer.
There it was. Not the small doe that they'd seen earlier. This was a magnificent full-grown stag, carrying at least 20 points on its spread antlers. It entered the open space below the hidden watchers, head turning from side to side, its nostrils flaring, as though it could almost scent the watchers. The animal turned and bounded away to the south at great speed. For a moment, Ryan was puzzled. Michael had said, when he had first seen them from the tree, that the hunt had been moving slowly, well spread. So how could they hope to bring down something as fast and powerful as the stag? Seconds later, it all became clear. Dodging between the pines, head down, panting and stumbling, came the figure of a middle-aged man. His brown jerkin was torn, and he had nothing on his feet, which were streaked with mud and blood. As he ran, he kept looking fearfully over his shoulder toward the crescendo of barking and shouting.
Dad?
Yeah. I reckon that he's the prey for the hunters, not the stag. It's a manhunt.
It was instantly obvious that the wretched man was in the last stages of exhaustion, overlaid with terror that had robbed him of all his senses. From less than 50 paces away, Ryan could see the blank horror in his eyes. The man's mouth hung open, his fingers plucking at the sleeve of his tattered shirt. There was a damp patch on the front of his light brown pants, showing where fear had loosed control of his bladder. Dean leaned farther forward, nearly slipping in the loose earth. But Ryan grabbed him by the belt, heaving him back into the ferns, only letting go when he was sure his son had recovered his balance.
Careful.
The end of the hunt was very near. The man dropped to his hands and knees, his stomach heaving as if he were trying to be sick. He hadn't moved when the first of the Rottweilers came bounding into sight. Mildred leaned against Ryan's shoulder to watch the last act of the drama. It seemed for a moment that the huge dogs, all wearing spiked brass collars, would tear the helpless, cringing figure apart. but they'd been well trained. One or two snapped in a ferocious excitement at the man, but the rest formed a tight circle around him, keeping him there. Heads up, they bathed their triumph to the following hunters. JB was alongside Mildred, his eyes screwed up behind the lenses of his spectacles.
Sectman coming.
Within half a minute, the clearing was filled with riders, all well mounted. 24 was Ryan's quick count, and well over half of them were unmistakably Sect guards for some powerful local baron, perhaps from the distant ville that the armorer thought he'd seen. Their uniform was a dark maroon, so deep a hue that it almost seemed black in the shadows. Most carried rifles slung over their shoulders, the blasters looking like the Armalite that the trader had always carried. There were five people in civilian clothes, four young men and a woman. But it was the woman that took the eye. Like the guards, she was wearing shirt and pants in dark maroon, but in her case they were made of fine soft leather, gleaming with a rich sheen in the late afternoon sunshine. Her boots were the same color, low-heeled, with savage Mexican spurs. A silver-hilted quirt dangled from her gloved right hand. Her face was pale, though Ryan could see two hectic spots of bright color on each high cheekbone. She had narrowed, almost oriental eyes, and the second most beautiful hair that Ryan Carter had ever seen. Christie's flaming mane was staggering in its brightness, but this woman's hair was a tumbling cascade of purest black. But black seemed a totally inadequate word. The softness of midnight velvet, the edge of a raven's wing, the still depths of a woodland pool. Ryan vaguely remembered once hearing Doc talk about a book or a vid called The Heart of Darkness. That was the nearest phrase he could think of to describe the waist-length hair of the woman on the gray mare. In passing, Ryan also noted that the flanks of the animal were speckled with blood behind the high pommeled saddle. Three of the Sect men swung down from their mounts, approaching the kneeling man, one of them beating the eager dogs away with a short-thonged whip.
Bring him to his feet.
The hunted man didn't make any effort to struggle as he was heaved upright, standing between the guards, who each held him by an arm. Ryan and the others knew, without a shadow of a doubt, that they were looking at a dead man. Mildred wondered what crime he could have committed to be chased like an animal. Dean's private guess was that he was an escaped prisoner. JB was studying the guns, impressed by their condition. Michael was feeling sick. Christie closed her eyes, the certainty of murder bringing a wave of sudden faintness. Doc was chasing a residual memory of some ancient story he might once have read, about someone hunting human beings with a pack of dogs. No, a pack of hounds. But it slipped elusively away from him, and he decided it probably didn't much matter. Ryan watched the woman, almost overwhelmed by the palpable and oddly sensual aura of power that surrounded her. The clearing had become almost silent. Most of the Rottweilers had thrown themselves on the trampled turf, their tongues lolling. The horses were still, with only an occasional shift of movement.
A disappointing chase, friends. But you have had your chance at saving your life, have you not?
There was no answer. The Sect man with the whip lashed the man across the face.
Answer Mistress Marie when she speaks, you bundle of shit in a skin!
The woman shook her head, her long hair glittering in sinuous movement, like a nest of countless black snakes.
Don't waste any more time. The sun is on his way to bed, and we should return home for food and rest. Do the necessary to him.
The necessary was brutal and mercifully swift, carried out with such a casual expertise that Ryan knew it had been done by these Sect men on many previous occasions. Off came the mud-splattered shirt, tossed down in the dirt. The Sect men on each side took a half-step away, pulling the man's arm straight. His ribs stood out like a picket fence against the pale skin of his chest. The man with the whip drew a heavy blade, like a bowie knife, 15 inches in length, tapering to a needle point. He glanced toward the woman on the horse, who nodded. Though her face was partly in shadow, Ryan caught the gleam of teeth and realized that she was smiling. The knife was thrust in hard, just below the man's navel, and was drawn up to grate against his breastbone, then to the left, toward his armpit, and back again, repeating the deep gash to the other side.
Flying eagle. It was a Viking way of butchery.
Blood flowed thick and dark from the man's cuts, across his trousers, puddling at his feet.
Now. Finish it now.
The sec man immediately plunged both of his hands, wrist deep, into the white-lipped gashes, fumbling for a moment, then pulling them out, holding the man's lungs, froth-coated and dripping, in his fingers. The other guards let go, and the dead man slumped to the bloodied earth. The woman merely tugged sharply on the reins of her mare, swinging it around.
Home again, I think. Leave the offal where it lies.
Ryan felt a release of tension. It was going to be all right for them. The wind was carrying their scent to the east, well away from the pack of hunting dogs, and it was obvious that not one of the riders had any clue that they were being observed from only a few yards off. If this was the way of life in the nearby ville, then it seemed that a better option for them all would be to return to the redoubt and face the unpleasant challenge of a third jump. Ryan had been around the Deathlands long enough to know that there might be a reasonable explanation for the way the man had been chased and butchered. One of the sec men had a short copper bugle that he put to his lips. The woman they called Mistress Marie heeled her mare across the clearing until she was directly beneath the bunch of ferns, some 20 feet above her. Ryan could have spat into her hair. The pack of hounds was already leaving, streaming along the trail toward the north, the powerful force of Sekmen readying themselves to follow. The four elegantly attired men, all of whom, Ryan saw, were only in their early 20s, carefully avoided the eyes of the woman. Nobody was taking any notice of the corpse, lying discarded on its face, arms spread like a supplicant. From above, it showed no signs of its hideous injury. The puddle of congealing blood was already attracting the interest of a number of mottle-winged blowflies.
Ugh! I am bored already. An hour or so of exercise, a few seconds of delight, and then it's over, just like that.
The woman kicked the spurs into the mare's flanks, making it rear. Dean had been leaning farther and farther forward, and the sudden movement of the horse made him jump. The loose, wet earth gave way, and before Ryan could snatch at the boy, Dean rolled helplessly down the slope, landing almost under the hooves of the woman's horse, flat on his back, arms lifted to his face to protect himself.
Gaia! I knew something bad was gonna happen.
If Dean hadn't been winded by the fall, there might have been some hope. Slender, admittedly, but there could have been the possibility of escape. A quick burst of shooting to bring down some of the armed sec men and panic the horses, then up and away into the surrounding woods. But even that had drawbacks. It would mean keeping together at the speed of the slowest member of the group, which was Doc, by a goodly margin. And there might be other hunting parties around the forest, all on their home turf, knowing the shortcuts and the streams. A man on a horse could easily ride down a running man, even in a woodland like this one, and the sec men looked disciplined and tough. Half a dozen guns were pointed at the breathless boy, and Ryan knew that this was one of those times for talking rather than shooting. He stood, showing both empty hands.
No danger. There's six of us here. Okay if we come on down?
The woman seemed least affected. She had looked up in surprise as the boy appeared from thin air and spooked her mare, but she regained control, pulling on the bit, again using her spurs. Now everyone waited for her to speak.
Why didn't you kill us, Outlander?
Not our way.
She smiled thinly. Now that Ryan could see her more clearly, he realized that she was older than he'd guessed, possibly a couple of years into her 30s. Her eyes were a dark brown, and looked curiously up at him.
That's a nice rifle and a quality hand blaster at your belt. Sig Sauer, the rest of you have weapons of that quality?
Dean managed to stand and was staring intently at his father, waiting for a signal to dart for cover. The woman touched the boy with the braided tip of her quirt.
Don't, lad. Don't even think about it for one... Ha ha ha! I see the resemblance. Your son?
Yeah.
I see. I could have shot him just by nodding my head, and you too.
Then you'd be chilled in less than a heartbeat, and half your pretty sec men with you.
JB had shuffled silently a few yards to his right, still keeping in the dead ground behind the brow of the small hill.
And the other half wouldn't last long either.
Christy had her blaster leveled, just out of sight.
You do know you're on the hunting land of my father, Baron Nathan Mandeville.
No.
Does it make a scrap of difference now that you know Outlander?
Not really.
The young man who spoke next had a shallow, spoiled face, and Ryan could almost swear was wearing women's makeup.
Why not just shoot them all, Mistress Marie? Or simply take them all prisoner?
I have long believed that your brain dwells in your cock, Lamar. And from what I know of your most recent performance, there is not much there. Don't think of speaking again unless I tell you that you can, which will not be until we are all back at Suncrest.
Want us to leave your father's lands?
No, Outlander. You look more interesting than most of the border scum that come crawling up here from the mud of the Sippy.
Then can we all come out?
Yes.
Ryan turned.
Stay on triple red. Everyone out when I give the word.
He turned back to the self-possessed woman.
After your sec man shoulder those armalites, if that's...
Of course.
A wave of her gloved hand brought instant obedience. Ryan led the way down the slope, leaning back to keep his balance in the loose earth. He was followed by Christy, then Mildred and Doc. Michael came next, with JB cautiously bringing up the rear.